Welcome back to the second hour of Leading Edge Medicine. Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umeb. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine, while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. And now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umeb, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
Hi there, and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine, brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinic. Dr. Mixon in the studio. Dr. Samira Umeb is off this weekend, but I think she'll be back after Memorial Day.
She will be back. She will.
Oh, yes. And I'll be gone Memorial Day and the following week for vacation. So Mark Holland is here.
I'm doing lots of training.
That's
today.
Right. Our producer, who's behind the scenes, will be in front of the microphone for the next week or so. After Memorial Day. So there you go.
That's my cue, Lynn. This is brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinic, of course, Leading Edge Medicine. Dr. Mixon, just I'm finding out so many, learning so many things from you just in the little bit that I've been training with Lynette. I need to get those phone numbers out, though. 800-465-8770. 800-465-8770, the number to call with your question for Dr. Mixon today. And we have John has been waiting a while. John in Tacoma, what is your question for Dr. Mixon?
Hello, John.
Hello. So my question is that, you know, I've been dealing with jock itch for 6 months, and I found that clotrimazole worked really good, but I had a prostate treatment thing that punctured some holes, and I think the stuff got inside. So I've been taking fluconazole.
All right.
For 6 weeks, and it doesn't seem to work.
Yeah. It's a different fungus.
I'm wondering. Right, and I told my doctor. I said, "Can we test whatever you want to put inside me with on the outside to make sure that it works?" And no. Just take this. This is what you got to do. So I'm wondering how to get an identification test to figure out what the thing really is.
Yeah, and it's not hard. All your doctor has to do is see you. It's not something you can do on the phone. He has to actually see you. He has to take a scraping and send that scraping to the laboratory. They will grow the fungus in the laboratory and try 8 or 10 different antifungal agents against it and see which one works best and then give you that one. This is not rocket science. This is 1950s medicine, you know. So sometimes we get so caught up in rushing for the latest technology that we miss the simple stuff. But that's all it takes. You know, this has been around for 6 months. You can wait another week or two to identify and test it. And you know, they grow it on an auger plate, and then they put these little tabs of kind of a blotting paper, that each of which have been soaked in a different antifungal agent, and wherever that blotting paper basically releases the drug and prevents the fungus from growing near it. And if you look and see the widest area in which there is no fungus, you say, aha, that's the most effective drug, and that's the one he writes a prescription for. Fluconazole is a, you know, it's nice drug for yeast, but it's not so good for a lot of the other fungi. So, you know, women that have a vaginal yeast infection, or overweight women that get the yeast growing between the skin folds on their belly, it works pretty darn good for those. But the jock itch is frequently a different, a different fungus instead of a simple yeast. So he needs to test it.
So is there a specific name for the scrape test?
Basically, he needs to call. It's a culture. Okay, he's looking for a culture and sensitivity of the fungus.
Okay. Yeah.
And
so I'll do that. And just a quick piece of information: a whole lot of people, including me, got married and had kids in the 1980s.
Yep.
And one thing I noticed was there was very little breastfeeding during that time.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing is that a whole lot of the families had males that were like over 6 feet tall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which was out of character for, you know, my size and the other's size. And I was just always curious as why are they getting so tall?
Because there are a lot of growth hormones that are fed to the cattle to make them produce more milk. It makes and so that comes off in the dairy products.
And the formulas that they were using instead of the breast milk?
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
And so, yeah, these are milk-based formulas, most of them.
I mean, okay.
There are some
some
soy-based and some corn-based and so on, but most are milk-based.
Mm-hmm. Back then, there are not a lot of dairy allergies.
Well,
right?
In the 1970s and 80s, it was very popular to load those cattle up with lots and lots of growth hormone, bovine growth hormone, because it made them produce. And, you know, they don't do that now. So, you know, the latest generation is not getting big growth hormone supplements in their milk. That's the good news.
Okay.
But even then,
my
wife will only allow our daughter, because I have an 11-year-old at home, to drink organic milk.
Mm, okay.
Whose cattle have not been dosed. Mm. So, answer your question?
Okay, thanks for the info.
You're welcome, sir. Take care.
Okay, thank you for that call. It opens up a line for you. Call now with your question for Dr. Mixon, 800-465-8770, 800-465-8770. We'll move on to Ann in Sammamish. She has a question for Dr. Mixon. Hi, Ann.
Hi. Well, what I would like to ask you about is, what should I expect my primary care physician to do for me when I go to see her? This is a new doctor because the previous one decamped to a different system, and I haven't had a physical from this new person yet. And I just thought, you must have some categories of areas that I should be considering that a good primary care physician's exam should expect.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah, I was a country doctor, primary care physician for the first 20 some years of my practice. Something I've done thousands of times. You know, it's people don't realize that most of the doctor's really important observations take place when you walk in the room. We're looking at, what is your skin color? Are your lips dusky? Are they pink? Is your skin nice and pink? Are you standing up straight? Are you leaning forward? Have you got this, you know, the starting of the Dowager's hump because your vertebrae are breaking down? Is your stride, you know, strong and confident and you know exactly where your feet are without having to look? Or are you shuffling and, you know, is there a tremor on your hands when you reach out for the chair to sit down? An awful lot of what you really need to know about this person is either in that form they filled out where they told you what life has done to them thus far, or your simple observations in the first 5 or 10 seconds as they come in the room and sit, which is why I didn't like them to load the rooms before I got there. I wanted to see the patient walk and come and sit down. Because that told me an enormous amount about their health right there. But, you know, assuming that they're following the standard assembly line of trying to load up 5 rooms in advance for the doctor to go to place to place to place, the doctor's only chance to see you move is going to be when you get up out of that first chair and get on the exam table.
Mm.
And that's better than nothing, but it's not as good as the full observation of seeing the patient come in the room. and shake your hand and feel what they are. Of course, now the doctors don't want to touch you anymore because they're all wearing gloves. They're terrified of actual skin-to-skin contact. He keeps saying, you know, that's why God invented hand washing stations. You know, you shake the patient's hand. You wash your hand after they leave the room because you don't want them to think you thought they were dirty.
Yeah, that's right.
But this putting on gloves before you touch a patient just offends the hell out of me because you can't feel the texture of their skin. Is their hand warm? Is it cold? Are they, you know, they have a good grip? Is there a tremor you can... There's a lot that goes on just from greeting and seeing a patient. Then much of the rest of the exam is an inventory. You know, eyes two, nose one, mouth present. Yeah, you're looking for obvious stuff on the exam. You know, do they have decent vision? Can they see what's going on? Do they hear you when you're talking? Or you're getting, can you speak louder, doc? You know, that sort of thing. Yeah, you're listening for heart murmurs. You're listening for clear lungs or rows or rasps or anything in those lungs that shouldn't be there. The belly, you're mostly looking to see, though, the shape of the belly. Is it round and protuberant and flabby, or is it scaphoid and lean? Is it firm? Is it soft? When you press on the belly, do they have any discomfort anywhere? Are you causing them pain? Because if so, why? Now you need to start exploring. You know, you're looking at their extremities and their joints. You want them to move well. You're doing those basic reflexes, but just because you were taught to do it in medical school. But you're not learning a whole lot from their reflexes 99% of the time. But you do want to see their feet. You want to see what kind of their peripheral circulation is like. Are their feet still nice and warm and pink, or are they getting a little dusky? Is the skin in their legs getting thin? Do they still grow hair on their legs? Or is the blood supply to that skin getting so bad that the hair won't grow anymore? Yeah. I could probably spend an hour just telling you the things the doctor should be looking for when they're evaluating the health of a patient. And it's art. It can't be done by a computer because it takes someone to actually look and feel and touch and palpate and evaluate as they're going. And maybe someday AI will, but they got to teach that thing a whole lot of perceptual stuff. Yes.
Okay. I am a patient of longevity, have been for almost 20 years. I'm in really good shape for 88. And good. I am wondering what longevity, my longevity doctor wants back from this.
Yeah.
Rather cursory exam that.
I'll tell you the things that our doctor is looking for. Have you had your mammogram? Have you had your pap smear? Are your vaccinations up to date? And have they made any new diagnoses? And have they changed any of your drugs? Those are the five things that my doctors really want to know. Obviously, if you haven't had a mammogram or a pap smear, we want you to have one. Because, you know, we don't want you to get a breast or a cervical cancer. And obviously, if you started a new medication, that's important.
I haven't had a pap smear for years.
Yeah. Well, have you had a history?
At my age, I think it's irrelevant, isn't it?
No, it isn't. If you die of a cervical cancer, you won't think it's irrelevant. All right? cervical cancers are curable, but you got to find them before you can cure them. And you can't find them unless you actually open up the vagina and take a smear of the cervix. Okay, you use a little brush and you just stick it in the cervix and spin it and then slide that on a slide and you spray it and to fix the cells and send it off to the pathologist. And we can pick up cervical cancers in the making long before they occur. My grandmother died of a cervical cancer.
Oh, wow.
Okay, and a totally unnecessary death because we've had pap smears for 100 years. But too many doctors, once you get old, they stop doing stuff because they figure you're going to die of something else anyway, so why bother? It takes time and it costs money. And the modern medical ethos is how little money can we spend and still stay out of court? Okay? And it just offends the hell out of me because You know, I'm now 76. I'm moving into that age range in which they don't think I'm worth looking at. They don't think I'm worth testing. And I'm so glad I got my own lab and my own place.
Yeah. So, doctor, if she did the PAP at age 88 and everything was clear and good, she may not have to do one for.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, yeah. But, you know, if you haven't had one in decades, for goodness sakes, go get one. Tell your doctor you want a PAP smear.
Right. Okay. That's the kind of information I really was looking for here.
Okay.
Because I didn't. My previous doctor told me, oh, you're too old, and it's you're too dry. There isn't anything there. So,
well, I'll tell you what, if you're our patient and you're too dry and there's nothing there, your doctor in our clinic isn't doing their job. We want you moist, young lady. We want you moist. All right.
Okay.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Yeah, okay, good.
Okay, thanks.
Information. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Ann.
Hey, call with your questions, 800-465-8770. Leading Edge Medicine brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinic with Dr. Jerry Mix. And need to take a quick break. We'll be back in moments.
Couldn't do that last week, huh? Welcome back.
Hey, Mark, helping out Lynette this week, and Dr. Mixon, and he's standing by to take your calls right now. Actually, sitting this week. Sometimes you stand, I've noticed.
I usually stand, yeah.
Okay. He's got his computer there with information for us.
Information for us. 800-465-8770. That is the number to call right now for your question for Dr. Mixon. 800-465-8770. We have some lines open for you. Good time to mention that there is the free health analysis appointment that you need to book right away. This program is brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinic, begun by Dr. Mixon. Now, I just found out in the previous hour, I've been going since 1998 with this clinic.
1998, that's
right. So long time doing what he does, helping people live longer. What's the slogan again?
Stronger, faster, leaner, smarter, sexier.
Which makes you
happier.
We want you to be happy, and Dr.
may or may not make your spouse happy. On the other hand, but that's a whole different
issue. I'd be jealous.
Well, tell us what's involved with this free health analysis appointment, Dr. Mixon.
Well, we're going to do three things really. We're going to start by getting a history. We want to know what life has done to you up till today, because you know, the more issues and autoimmune problems you've had, the more problems you're likely to have in the future. Mm-hmm. Then we want to do two tests. We're going to do a in-body that's going to measure the amount of muscle and fat in each of your extremities and in your torso. And that's an issue even with people that are lean, because with age, we start infiltrating our muscles with strands of fat, and the muscle may look like it's still there, but it's getting weaker, because part of the muscle is now fat. And that visceral fat kicks out more than 80 different peptides, enzymes, cytokines, and hormones that impact how we age. They have a big impact on everything from cognitive decline and dementia to strokes to heart attacks to degenerative joint disease. Most people don't think that their hips and knees breaking down has anything to do with their belly, but it does.
Wow.
That visceral fat actually dramatically accelerates the rate at which your joints fall apart. And then we will do another little blood test. This one is going to look at the percentage of your red blood cells that have been damaged by sugar. And what folks don't realize there is you don't have to be a diabetic to have an impact. One of the most telling studies I ever saw on A1C is that normal A1C is between 4.4 and, quote, 6.5. At 6.5 and above, you become a diabetic. 5.7, you are called now pre-diabetic.
Mm, okay.
But a person with an A1C of only 5.2 is losing 0.25, so one-fourth of 1% of brain volume every year.
Okay, and that's where you want us to be, right?
We'd like to keep
5.2.
But by 5.7, you've doubled that. You're losing 0.5. So you double the amount of brain volume that you lose every year. And that's pretty terrifying because even at the lower level, you're going to lose 2.5% of your brain volume over a 10-year period. But at 5.7, you're losing 5% of your brain volume over a 10-year period.
Wow. And you're still talking just pre-diabetic numbers.
And in diabetics, it goes up and up and up. And as the A1C rises, so when doctors tell my diabetics, well, you know, you're 7.5, you're fine. I'm saying, no, you're not. Because at 7.5, your risk of dementia is 3 times that of someone at 5.2. You know, the brain don't work, the rest don't matter.
Yes.
So if we see significant risks, then we're going to offer you a full panel that'll do a 70-some page printout that's going to look at things your primary care doctor has never looked at in their life. And we're going to be able to sit down with you, have your have the LMC doctors spend a full hour going over your labs, and they'll be able to tell you exactly what it is we think needs to be done to help you be stronger, faster, leaner, smarter, and sexier next year than this year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's our goal. So if you want to go downhill, if you like getting slow, weak, fat, dumb, and sexless as the time goes by, fine, go with it. You know, it's your life, live it as you choose. But if slow, weak, fat, dumb, and sexless is not the future that you envision for yourself, let us help you. Let us make you stronger, faster, leaner, smarter, and sexier.
Mm-hmm.
You can go either way.
That's right. Those senior moments that, you know, kind of, I forgot about this or that.
Why did I come in the room?
That's a serious thing. And you don't want to have that, especially for what we do. You need your words and your memory.
Yes, you do.
Wow.
Okay. Well, hey, this sounds like the appointment you want to sign up for, a free health analysis appointment. If you'd like to sign up for this and find out more about what Longevity Medical Clinic can do for you, call right now and book that appointment. 1-866-86-YOUNG. That's 1-866-86-YOUNG. You can also book an appointment online at lmclinic.com. And there are clinics near you. There's one in Kirkland, Tacoma, and Linwood. Longevity Medical Clinic. I need to book an appointment here pretty soon.
Yes, yes, get
you
in.
Do.
You know, Mark, I will say, when I came in, I thought this was my problem. When they actually did that panel on me, it's like, no, those numbers are good. And there were other things. It's like, oh, my goodness, I didn't know this or this or this. And they're working with me very slowly because I had new hormones. And now my body, a year later, is actually making its own, which is a good thing, and I can definitely tell. No more naps needed in the middle of the day because I'm dragging when I get home.
I am a napper, so maybe that's a sign of
yeah. Or, you know, there's something for, you know, I love a power nap. That's a good thing for me. Like 30 minutes is great. But when I'm just dragging and I'm like, I know. It's like, okay, did I take this? Did I forget this? Yeah, I can definitely tell. You get so much good information. And you have a doctor that you can ask about all those, a whole hour. I don't even think I've seen my doctor for a whole hour. I know I haven't. My primary care. I'm 5-7 minutes maybe.
Yeah.
So get in. You're going to get so much good information, and you're going to finally know what does what.
Again, that number to call for the appointment with Longevity Medical Clinic is 866-86-YOUNG. You can also book it online at lmclinic.com. Back to your phone calls. That number to call is 800-465-8770. If you have a question for Dr. Mixon about anything, I'm finding out he knows a lot.
Oh boy, yes.
800-465-8770. And we have Alan in Burien with a question for Dr. Mixon. Hi, Alan.
Hello, Alan.
Hello. Hello. My question is about the frequency of, continued colonoscopies as you get older. I'm 71. Mm-hmm. I'm an MS patient, and I've got a bunch of other health problems. My doctor tells me I've had a stroke because of my condition of MS, and I've changed medication, and I'm doing better now, which I didn't know that was possible. But anyway, my question's about the last time I talked to my GP, first he asked me, well, when's the last time you had a colonoscopy? And I said, it's been a couple of years now. And I was thinking, you know, I've been having them a little earlier because every time they've done that, they've removed some lesions that were of some length. And I'm thinking, you know, if I wait any length of time, you know, like beyond 3 years, that possibly they could grow, you know, too long. Something could occur because of that. And then he told me, he says, well, you're about at the age, this might be the last one you get. Because he's saying that when you get over, well, 73 years old, I guess was the date he gave me, that they think it's too hard on you to have a colonoscopy. And I was just curious, what are your thoughts on that?
I think colon cancer is harder on you than a colonoscopy.
Yeah.
Frankly. I don't feel like dying a miserable death with, you know, colon cancer that spread to my liver and throughout my peritoneum. So, no, I'd still have the colonoscopy. Once more, this is that nihilistic approach towards elderly people. Just because we've lived a while, they figure we're not worth the effort. And I disagree. I'm worth it.
Yes, you are.
You know, I turned 76 in August. And, you know, so by your doctor's standard, I would not be worth a colonoscopy. In your situation, I would definitely do a colonoscopy, because you're telling me that every time they do it, they end up removing lesions. Now, I'm presuming that these are adenomatous polyps that they're finding and removing. And it turns out, colon cancer begins in the adenomatous polyps. The vast majority of colon cancer, what you do is you grow a polyp. This is a little stalk that kind of grows up off the surface of the colon and goes out into the lumen. And as that thing grows, the mutations that trigger the cancer usually occur out at the tip, the very tip of that polyp. And the cancer starts there and it grows down the polyp until it finally invades the wall of the colon. And once it's invaded the wall of the colon, then you have to have big hunk of your colon removed. And if it gets into the wall of the colon and spreads, the next step is, you know, invasive colon cancer. And the step after that is now you've got a stage 4, where it's spreading remotely. And your chances of surviving dropped close to zero. If you can do the colonoscopies often enough to find those polyps before that cancer starts and remove the polyp, you'll never have the cancer. If you remove the polyps and a cancer has already started in the polyp way out at the tip, if it's not down to the base of the polyp, again, you've dodged the bullet. So in a person that we know forms polyps and we know the cancer forms in the polyps, why on earth would they stop doing colonoscopies on you when that's the best way to determine whether or not you're going to develop this colon cancer? That just boggles my mind. You know, I've never had an adenomatous polyp. I mean, when they've done mine, I've always been clean, so I've said, fine, I could probably afford to wait a little longer than you. But with your history, I'd raise hell. Don't let them get away with it.
The only problem I've had is at the very time that a couple of years ago when I had one, they didn't find I wasn't taking the best high blood pressure medicine. And when I went in, I guess I had the white coat syndrome and my blood pressure was like way up there. So I had to wait before they could give me the colonoscopy. You know, they wanted to see my blood pressure down. But now everything's pretty stable. I've been able to bring that down. So that's the only complication I can think of that I would ever be facing with something like this, which I don't believe I have that problem right now.
Okay, sit tight. Hear the music. So, it means I've got to take a break because we're at the bottom of the hour.
Sure.
But anywhere. No, don't go anywhere. I'm going to get back to you as soon as this break's over. Okay.
Okay, just hang in there just a moment or so, and that opens up a line for you, though. 800-465-8770. 800-465-8770. Your questions for Dr. Jerry Mixon. This is the Leading Edge Medicine Program brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinic. We'll be back in just a few moments. right. Well, we are back with Leading Edge Medicine and Dr. Jerry Mixon, taking your calls right now at 800-465-8770, 800-465-8770. We kept Alan on through the break there and got a real interesting discussion about colonoscopies.
Yeah.
Well, and Alan, here's what I'd like to suggest to you. Tell your doctor that you want to have the colon stool test to start with. Okay. Now, there is a test that we can do that they give you a little packet and some big Q-tips. You just wipe it on some poop. So when you use the toilet and you just reach in and you wipe this Q-tip and you stick it in a little envelope and it gets mailed off to a company that will look for genetic markers that are consistent with developing cancers. And it's not perfect, but it's about 97-98% accurate at picking up cancers. Now, that's the good news. Now, here's
the procedure you're talking about. I've did that about 10 years or more ago. That I don't know what my problem was. I've had a lot of health issues, but I'm familiar with that test.
Okay, well, you do that every year. You can do this each year and screen to see if you're getting any genome coming out in that poop that is worrisome for a colon cancer. Now, I just told you to do it, and I'm going to tell you the problem with it, okay? And that is, it's good at picking up cancers, but because as we get old, our colons are not as healthy as they used to be, and we're getting all kinds of mutations anyway. So over about 72, 73 years old, that test will pick up, give us what we call false positives. You'll get a result back that says, oops, we think this guy might have a cancer. Okay, that's better than missing a cancer. If they think you got one, what they'll do next is then they say, do a colonoscopy. Go in and look and see what's in there. Okay. So it doesn't miss cancers as you get older. Okay. It's still very good at picking up cancers. The problem with it is in older people is it sometimes tags for a cancer when there isn't one. But the only downside of that is you have to then have a colonoscopy to double check the test. So, you know, but I don't like having colonoscopies. They're miserable. So I do the stool test. And then if it's ever positive, I'll go get the colonoscopy. Then tells your doctor he doesn't have to worry about the risks. You're not doing a colonoscopy. You're just doing a genetic test on your stool. No big problem there, right? Then if it comes back worse.
It's called a stool test?
The first company that came out was called Cologuard. C-O-L-O-G-U-A-R-D, Cologuard.
Okay,
and so, but there's now a dozen different brands out there. Cologuard was the first, and now there's a lot of new competitors. So you tell him you want the stool test for colon cancer, and as long as it's negative, you're probably okay. You're about 97% chance you don't have a colon cancer if it says you don't. But if it ever says you do, then you have to go get the colonoscopy.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, I could be calling you. I could be on the program probably for over an hour. All the different. I've got prostate cancer, so and it's my PSA results are very low right now. So
good.
I had that one biopsy, and one out of the 12, I guess, was considered malignant.
Right.
So they've been watching it pretty close, and I got another question. How some of these values I've been hearing that from the PSA test, the lowest I've ever had is I believe it's not much above 5.
Okay.
I've been hearing a lot lower numbers. I've never had those low numbers before.
Well, and if your prostate cancer has been treated successfully, it should be less than 1. Okay, so if you're still running up around 5, it tells me you've still got a problem. So, but tell you what,
My urologist doesn't care to pursue it other than just to watch it.
Yeah. Well,
you know, if it gets up higher, he'll do something else, I guess.
Do you know what your Gleason score was?
Oh, no, I'm not familiar with that.
All right. Okay, Gleason score is a score that the urologist gives the cancer. It tells you how big the tumor was, where it was, did it get out, does it go outside of the capsule, and so on. The Gleason score goes anywhere from 6 to 10. A 6 is the lowest cancer that is actually a malignancy. 10 is a very, very nasty cancer that people are probably going to die from. If you have a Gleason 6 or 7, there's a 93% chance that they can just sit and watch that tumor, and it will not kill you in the next 15 years. So the fact that they're not doing anything with it with a PSA over 5 tells me they probably are thinking you've got a very low Gleason score, which puts you at low risk of dying from the tumor. But on the other hand, you've got MS, and that always worries me because people say, well, he's got MS anyway. Why bother being aggressive? That offends the hell out of me. So I don't know what your doctor is thinking. Obviously, I haven't talked to your doctor. But I can think of two possibilities. You've either got a low Gleason score, so you're low risk of dying, and so they're just going to watch it. Or you've got cancer and MS, and so they're saying, well, why are we going to bother spending the money? And I don't know which answer it is, but I hope it's the first one.
Well, I ask so many questions when I usually come out of the doctor's office. They keep telling me, well, we spend more time with you than we have the rest of our patients, because I'm still asking questions. But what I've got to do is I don't have, a portal that I've been using. I've just been calling in and talking to a nurse, and then they relay the messages. Yep. And maybe that's a big problem. I should really...
You might want to go to somebody that has a portal. Yeah, we're changing our electronic record system so that all of our patients will have portals and will be able to see their lab work from home. But we hopefully have that up and running in September. Anyway, thank you, sir, for your call. Mm-hmm. And good luck. And
thank you very much.
Don't let people tell you you're too old to get care. Damn it, you lived a long time. That just says you're well seasoned and you want the care you deserve, okay?
All right. There you go.
Well, thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Hey, oh, Alan, thank you for that call. And there is room for you for probably a couple more phone calls on this show today. But, Doctor, about 2 or 3 weeks ago, you had mentioned, since we're talking about the colonoscopies, it used to be 50 that they would start doing them.
Yes.
And now it's different. It's changed.
It is. Yeah, we're seeing colon cancer in younger and younger people. You know, it's just like we're seeing strokes in younger and younger people. We're seeing heart attacks in young people. We're seeing cancers in younger people. And the question is why? You know, and my personal guess, and I don't have a proof, but my guess is it's because our immune responses are just flabby because the people are overweight and sedentary. Working muscle, the more muscle you've got, the more frequently, intensely that muscle works, the more robust your immune system is, the better chance you have of finding and killing cancers before they kill you. The fatter you are, the more sedentary you are, the worse your immune response is. Okay, 20 to 22% of all the cancer in America is caused simply by excess fat. That's okay. And we could reduce the cancer incidence in this country by 22% if we weren't a fat country. That's pretty mind-boggling.
Is our country the fattest on the planet, or pretty close?
We are the fattest large country on the planet. There are some small. Tonga. The island of Tonga is fatter than we are.
The sumo wrestlers, is that what you're talking about? Larger?
Sumo is Japanese.
Oh, that's right.
Okay. But no, there are some South Pacific islands that are very inbred populations that are very fat.
Okay.
But other than some of these very small island populations, yes, America is by far the fattest country in the world. And that's why our medical care costs are so high. Mm-hmm. It's not so much the charges. It's the amount of disease that we develop that we have to treat.
Wow. Okay.
Well, that opens up a line for you, and we would love to take your call right now. We'll get to Roger here in just a moment, but we need to take a quick break. Call right now with your question for Dr. Mixon, 800-465-8770, 800-465-8770. This is Leading Edge Medicine, brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinic. Dr. Mixon will take your call here in just a moment as we take this quick break.
Mark, you sing. You're going to have fun with this. Coming
this
back. Good morning.
Yeah, Mark helping out Lynette this week because I'll be going solo here in a couple of weeks.
That's right. I'll be on vacation.
So they're getting me ready for that and be praying for me. Leading Edge Medicine is the program you're listening to. It's brought to you by, of course, Longevity Medical Clinic, and taking your calls right now, 800-465-8770, 800-465-8770. And we are going to Roger in Marysville with a question about statin drugs for Dr. Mixon. Hi, Roger.
Hello, Roger.
Good morning, Dr. Mixon. I had a general question on simvastatin, 40 milligrams.
Uh-huh.
I've been taking this since I was 55. I'm 76. I'm your age now. And I quit taking the statin about 2 weeks ago. Should I not have stopped, or should I just continue on with it? Will it hurt me, or will I have any problems if I get off it like I have?
Well, I guess the question is, why were you on the statin?
Oh, my doctor put me on it when I was 55. It was 230 or 40.
Your total cholesterol was 230 or 240. That's a good reason to have been put on a statin. So now you're off it. What is your cholesterol running now?
It's running February. It was 145.
That was very nice.
It's doing its thing. Yeah, it's doing what it's supposed to do. So should I stay on it, doctor? Should I just stay off it, or should I go back on it? I wasn't sure.
Okay, well, and let's stop and talk about it for a minute here, okay? Whether you need to go back on it or stay off it depends on a whole lot of stuff. For instance, have you leaned down? Have you lost weight since you've been on it? You know, are you chubbier or are you leaner?
Actually, I gained about 3 or 4 pounds in a couple of weeks.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I work out a lot, doctor. I do aerobics, and I work out 5 days a week. I'm about 220 pounds, pretty muscular.
Okay. I'll tell you what I would do if you were I'm going to presume you're not a patient at our clinics. Is that right?
I was in your clinic about 8 years ago.
Okay.
I went through the blood test and all that. So.
Well, you probably... If you want to do the best you can do, I'd suggest you come back and become a patient, okay? But if you were our patient, here's where we would approach this. We do not just your basic cholesterol panel. We'd probably do a Boston panel on you, in which we look at the LDL and the HDL, but we subfractionate them each into 3 subfractions and see. We know a lot more now about which types of cholesterol put you at risk and which don't. Back 30 years ago, cholesterol was just cholesterol. Now we can subfraction the cholesterol. We can tell you the particle sizes and how many of each particle you've got and give you a much more precise evaluation of what your risks are. If your risks are low, we might just keep you off it and we might use other things. For instance, most people don't realize testosterone supplementation lowers the risk of heart attacks more than statins do. PDE5 inhibitors, the so-called ED drugs, lower the risk of heart attacks better than statins do. And so, you know, we might do other things to make you more vigorous and stronger and healthier and happier and still lower your risk of a heart attack better than the statin did. But by checking now the more modern evaluations of your cholesterol types, we can also decide, you know, do you still need that lipid lowering agent or not? Maybe you're going to do fine without it, but I don't know without testing.
I see. Well, your program's helpful, Doctor. I try to listen to it before I work out every Saturday. It's an awesome program you have here. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome, sir. And, you know, come on back and let us make you stronger, faster, leaner, smarter, and sexier. Your wife or all six girlfriends will appreciate it, I promise.
Wait.
All right.
Uh-oh. That's funny.
Okay. Take care, sir.
Thanks, Roger.
Bye there, Roger.
Hey, we'll move on to Steve in Bellevue. And another question about statins. Steve, what's your question specifically for Dr. Mixon?
So a few weeks ago, I was listening to you, Dr. Mixon, and you were talking about people that take a statin, you know, do better if they do testosterone therapy. And there was a third drug that you mentioned where they do even better. I'm a big guy. I'm 58 years old. Uh-huh. I've had bypass surgery. Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you.
Oh, sorry. I had bypass surgery when I was 54. And so I got put on a statin, and I take blood thinners.
Good.
And you know, and I also do testosterone therapy. I've been doing that for about 5 years.
Okay.
But there was a third medicine that you mentioned.
Yeah, tadalafil. Tadalafil.
What is it?
Tadalafil. T-A-D-A-L-A-F-I-L. Tadalafil. It's an ED drug. It was originally designed to improve erectile function. But it turns out that it dilates the blood vessels in your heart. It lowers your risk of heart attacks. In fact, the fascinating study that we were looking at, that we were talking about, was there was a study in diabetic men, and they were looking at the risk of heart attacks and death from cardiac disease, not just the heart attack, but actually dying. And they found that in diabetic men by age 50, if they were on nothing, 30% of them had died. If they were on a statin, it was like 26% or 25% of them had died. But if they were on testosterone and a statin, that dropped down to about 10%. And if they were on statin, testosterone, and a PDE5 inhibitor like tadalafil, it was 2% had died. And so, so a very dramatic risk. Now, these were diabetics, because diabetics have a very high risk of dying of cardiovascular disease. And so they picked them because they knew they were high risk. But even in that high risk population, you drop their risk of dying from 30% to 2%.
Just with those three
drugs. So
Tadalafil,
that's right.
So he should maybe ask his doctor for that?
Of course he should ask his doctor.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, asking his grocer or his shoe salesman is not going to help.
That's not going to help.
He needs to ask his doctor.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Take care, sir. Bye-bye.
Okay, thanks, Steve. Moving on to John in Vancouver, and he wants to know how to strengthen the prostate. Hi, John. What's your specific question for Dr. Mixon?
Good morning.
Thank you for your service, doctor. Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Is there anything? I've tried the Rezūm. I did the Rezūm. I've even had a Urolift, everything to try to help me with urination. Big prostate. Is there anything? Got a silver bullet to do that one yet?
Nope. I don't have a silver bullet. I mean, there are several different ways to treat prostatic enlargement. And if you've had the Rezūm, you've had the least invasive one already, and that apparently has not done the job for you, or you wouldn't be calling.
Correct.
Did you talk to your doctor about repeating the Rezūm and killing more of the prostate tissue?
No.
Okay. Chat with him about it. See if he thinks you might be a candidate to get a second Rezūm procedure. you know, each time when they do that resume, they're killing a very small piece of the prostate right around the urethra. But they may just not have killed enough. And so, it may be that going back and doing it again and being a little more aggressive about it might solve your problem. You can kill a great big piece of the prostate with arterial prostatic embolization, where they basically thread a catheter up your arm or from your groin, more likely, and thread this catheter through the artery right into the blood supply of the prostate. And they can inject a little foamy micro beads in there that'll plug up all the small blood vessels, and so that a lot of the prostate is starved for blood supply and dies and shrivels up and goes away. That works very well, but it's not done very often because it's not done by urologists who treat most of the prostates. It's done by procedural radiologists. And it's one of those procedures that it takes a little bit of art. It takes somebody that's had some practice. So finding a invasive radiologist who has done several is a little difficult. I know of one in the Seattle area that has probably done more than anybody else, but he's the only one I know about. There may be half a dozen others, but there's a Dr. Johnson over at the University of Washington that's a procedural radiologist that I'm aware of several people he has done that way. And then, of course, there's the old-fashioned TURP, where they just go in with a cutting loop and shell out the prostate from inside. But that always destroys the external valves from the bladder. And I can guarantee that you will have urinary incontinence for some period of time. Maybe only a month or two or three, but sometimes even permanent, though vast majority of people recover their control within the year. But, you know, that one is my least favorite method. It's been around since the 1950s. It's reliable. Lots of urologists like to do it because it is reliable. But, you know, it's got downside with leaky urine, and most guys don't want to wear an adult diaper for the next 6 months while they get their control back.
What is the radiologist procedure called?
It's a prostatic arterial embolization.
Okay.
You can look that up and read about it. Okay, take care, sir. We got to go.
We're out of time.
All right, bye-bye.
Okay, thank you, and that'll wrap it for this edition of Leading Edge Medicine. It's brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinic, and again, we want you to sign up for that free health analysis appointment, and it includes two free tests, a blood test, and quickly, doctor, what's the in-body test?
Well, the in-body test is going to look at the muscle versus fat in all four extremities and in your torso. And it's going to give you a really nice reading for where we need to go as far as your body fat and muscle goes.
Okay, call for that appointment at 866-86-YOUNG, 866-86-YOUNG, or more details and schedule your appointment at lmclinic.com. Mark Holland helping out Lynette this week.
Oh, yeah.
I'll be solo after Memorial Day.
That's right. We have a wonderful show, kind of a best of, happening next weekend for Memorial Day. And then I'll be on vacation. Mark will be here. But Dr. Jerry Mixon, always here for Leading Edge Medicine. Have a great rest of your weekend.